I am Ken McCarthy, and I'm here at your service for the next 3 hours. We've been doing this for years and years, and sometimes I forget to do it, and then I remember how much fun it is, and we do it again. Basically, I'm going to just take any and all calls on anything related to things that I know something about, advertising, copywriting, marketing, online marketing, business strategy, those kinds of things. And it's never easy to predict how many people will be on these calls and how much demand there will be at any given time. So, you know, I may limit people to, you know, let's say 5 minutes, 7 minutes. If we can go longer on something, we will. Sometimes a topic is of value to everybody to listen to. And we're just going to try to keep things moving along. Now, somebody called in very early named Mike. So we are going to start with, assuming Mike's still on, we're going to give Mike the first shot. Hey, Mike, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm here.
How are you doing? What does your most recent research tell you about long copy versus short copy?
Most recent research.
In terms of conversion.
Yeah. You know, it's a pretty much standard answer, which is an ad should be as long as it needs to be to do what it needs to do. So I'm not one of these people that will say, oh, you know, long copy always, long copy always beats short copy, because it's just not true. There are a lot of situations where long copy will reduce response. I went to a really interesting seminar in London put on by Drayton Bird, and it was a 5-day thing, and Drayton's been around so long, and he knows so many people. And one of the people that came to speak was a woman who's a pretty senior executive in the biggest media buying firm in the world. So these people buy direct mail stuff, they buy television time, they buy radio time, buy the millions and millions and millions of dollars, and they track all the results. And she said something really interesting about long copy, and it was actually one of the most interesting things I've ever heard about long copy, and I'd never thought of it before, and I'd certainly never heard anyone say it before, and it's this. If you're selling something that's really expensive, you better have a lot of copy to justify the purchase. It doesn't. I'm going to go back to lecture mode. Hang on 1 second. It doesn't mean that somebody's going to read every word, but you better have lots and lots and lots and lots of justification for the time investment, the money investment, whatever that may be. I mean, I was thinking about that, and I was thinking the psychology of it. And it makes perfect sense. You know, if I'm going to spend a lot of money, I need to justify that to myself. I also need to have to cover my ass, you know, if I'm buying it on behalf of somebody else, or if I'm married and I have to justify it to my spouse, or, you know, or I have to justify it to my employer. I can't just come to them with a postcard and say, hey, you know, this looks like a good thing. It's $10,000 and I bought it. What do you think? If I come to them with a, you know, a 32 or a 64 page or a whole book that's devoted to selling this thing, then I'm more likely to buy. And based on, and I don't have hard research on it. I don't think this woman has hard research on it either. But you just look at the market and you see what works and what doesn't work. And clearly, if you've got something elaborate and expensive and new and complicated, there better be a lot of copy involved. Even if few people will actually read and study the copy, they want to see the copy. They want to see that you've put through the effort. So. That's my new answer to that, and then my old answer, which I'll probably never change, is copy needs to be as long as it needs to be, no longer, no shorter. You can actually shoot yourself in the foot sometimes by writing too long copy when it's not necessary. I mean, here's the thing about copywriting, right? It's a tool. It's supposed to function, okay? So you have to think in advance, what's my goal? What am I trying to accomplish with this particular piece of copy, with these particular people, at this particular time? And then you set the copy according to that standard. There really is no long is good, short is good, long is bad, short is bad. So I'm going to ask you what it is that you're selling, and maybe we can, you know, get a more specific answer for you. Yeah, what are you selling?
Yeah, we're just launching a mastermind group of four separate groups of six, which is 24, and we're going to a conference. And I sort of had a debate with my partner, a short-lived debate, about the direct mail.
So you guys have a mastermind, and you've got a partner.
So we're putting together this group, and we're going to a conference. There's going to be 1,000 people there, and we're introducing this program. So we were sort of going back and forth in terms of, you know, how long should the direct mail piece be? And so we ended up with 12 pages. So I'm glad to hear that what you just conveyed, because I think it probably helps justify jumping into a 6-month program. It's both, you know, a commitment, time commitment. It hit both the qualifications you were talking about, time commitment, and it's relatively expensive. I mean, this, we're doing 6 months, and it's a couple grand, so it's not a fortune, but it's still a lot of money. So it hits both those bullet points. So that's, I like that observation.
I'm glad you mentioned this. Yeah, it was funny that I had never heard that one before or thought about it. It just makes perfect sense. I'm glad you mentioned that you're going to be at a conference. Are you actually going to be presenting this live at the conference from the stage?
No. We bought a bag stuffer, so we've put together a folder which will have the direct mail piece, and we also bought a 30-second sort of commercial spot at the breaks. Our 30-second commercial will come up, so it's not live, but we'll be a video, sort of a quick video that'll play about 10 times, and then it's in the bag stuffer.
Okay, so this is very interesting, because there may be some other people on the call who have opportunities to market at live events, and you know, live events are fantastic because everybody in the room is qualified. They may not necessarily end up becoming your customers, but you know that they're interested in the topic and they're interested enough to spend time, money, and effort to move their body from point A to point B and park it somewhere for a couple of days. So it's a very, very highly motivated, highly refined set of prospects. So I want to encourage everybody, even though, you know, we talk about internet marketing all the time, any chance that you get to, you know, even just go and wander around a conference that's related to the niche that you're in, do it, you know. And if you have a chance to be a presenter, do it, you know. It's just the best lead generation you could possibly do. So we're going to spend a little time on this because there's some principles involved in lead generation that I think will apply to everybody. And I'd like to state this. We are all in the lead generation business, and whatever it is you're selling, lead generation is always going to be a huge, huge, huge part of your success. So let's focus on how Mike is actually generating these leads, because I might be able to offer some suggestions to him that you may be able to adapt to what you're doing. So your material is going to end up in a bag that every attendee gets.
Yeah, it's interesting you just pointed out, because you're talking about it. We're all online marketers, but you know, this is what we're looking at this as a strategy that we're going to help others deploy as well. Because even though we're going to be in a physical location and we're handing them a physical folder with a long copy letter, the sign up form, everything drives them back to the landing page.
Gotcha. So let me guess. Will there be your URL printed on the folder that the papers are in?
Correct.
Great. Great, because you want the most basic thing for everybody is, if your goal is to get them to the web page, even if you're handing them a 12 or 100 page sales letter and it's in a folder, make sure that URL is boom right on it. Because I guarantee a lot of people are going to get that folder, they're not even going to open it. You know, it's painful to think of because you put so much effort in the letter, but it's just how it works. There's a percentage of people that won't even open the folder, but they will read what's on the cover of the folder. So therefore, we want to think about what's exactly going to be on the cover of that folder. So you're going to have your URL, and what else? You're going to have anything else on the cover?
Well, the cover, we've actually – can I mention the conference that we're going to?
Well, as long as it's not something that I think is crap. I'm sure it isn't.
Fusion, is it Infusionsoft?
No comment. Go ahead.
Anyway, so there's going to be a lot of people using that system. So, of course, we're talking about and I think you've talked about this a bunch of different times, you know, automating the opt-in process, the sequence, and being able to, you know, automate that process. We're, you know, really taking it one step further and say, okay, you can have a great CRM system, whichever one you choose, that has, you know, an automated opt-in sequence and follow-up and, you know, drip, drip, drip. But the holes that we're looking at are in the landing page, the actual copy and the graphics, and what the buttons look like. And, you know, it's one of those areas where we feel that people are paying so much attention to after people get into the funnel that there's a big opportunity to help coach people about, you know, how many people, you know, the drop-off rate after they get on the landing page. What happens to the, you know, the 50% bounce rate, the 50 that bounced off, and how to improve that, because that's really where I think the main leverage point is. If you can improve
Absolutely.
That by 10 or 50. Yeah, so the cover actually has a diagram, you know, a mind map diagram of a sequence, both failing, and with potential reasons. The offer is not clear, not a compelling headline, poor graphics, the right product, right customer, long time, pricing structure is not accurate, segmentation and persona mistakes. So those type of things.
That's nice. This is brilliant. I love this. So you not only, because I'll tell you what, a lot of companies will do the following. They'll put their material in a folder with nothing on the cover, which we've all seen, and it's baffling to me, but they all do it. Or they'll put something on with like a logo that says, you know, essentially we are the best, or something like the cutting edge of whatever. And what you've done is you've actually put useful, attractive content right on the cover of your of the sales letter that you're giving out. So this is going to...
The brochure, yeah, the brochure. One side's got this graphic. The other side has it says, every day thousands of prospective customers hover their mouse pointers right on your buy buttons. They're about to accept your offer, but then at the last moment they click away.
Mm-hmm.
The new revolutions in automated email marketing, analytics, copywriting, graphic design will show you how to convert these lost opportunities.
Wow.
But just leave them with one side. So it's the folder, which traditionally, as you said, is, you know, just blank with someone's logo. But we went the other way and said, what happens if they don't open the folder?
Yeah, for everybody listening, this is the way you have to think. It's very easy to get enamored of all the little mechanics that you're doing in your marketing and forget how somebody who doesn't know you and doesn't know your business and doesn't know all the effort you put into your sales letter, they're going to get a bag. There's going to be a lot of stuff in it. They're going to go through it. And anything that's confusing or unclear or not compelling is going to end up in the trash, you know. So that Mike has put his proposition and even some content by showing, you know, the different paths that a lead can take, he's like massively increased his odds that folder is going to be open and read. I mean, you're clearly in the right place. I mean, everybody in that room is going to be conscious about the value of improving conversions and improving copywriting and tracking people all the way through. Now one thing I do have to say is, okay, so great. So they're gonna see the letter, they're gonna see the cover, and they're gonna come to your website. And then when they come to your website, what do they have there?
Well, we have the long copy letter. It's 12 pages with for the mastermind group. But we've also created a free special report, which we said, okay, you know, we have to have a hook. And so the free special report is the one big mistake that's costing you millions of dollars. And that is going to be on the website, so they can go download that free report.
Gotcha. Great. Because obviously not everybody's going to go for the mastermind, but if they're interested enough to come to your topic, or to come to your web page, they're obviously interested in the topic, and you definitely want to get a lead from them so you can continue to follow them up.
Was our thinking, that there's a limited number of people that are going to come to the mastermind, but once again, it's like that. It's like when someone comes to your website and you have a 50% bounce rate, what happens to the other 50%? We said the same thing. There's going to be 1,000 people there, and we can only take 24, so what happens to the other 976? So if they read the sales letter and they like it, but they aren't going to be in the mastermind, then let's get them into the system. Let's give them something else for free of value, and then we can, you know, start tripping on them.
And then in addition to, I'm going into some detail with Mike on this, because these principles will universally apply to everybody. So in addition to the mastermind service that you offer, it sounds like you also offer copywriting and consulting services too, right?
Yeah, exactly. We will work with a handful of clients. We're not working with 50 or 100 clients. We're working with 10 or 20 clients, and we'll review their whole sales, lead generation, sales, automation, and client communication process. So that all the way from the front end, which is the website, and what we're finding is most organizations have websites, but a lot of them are stuck back in Web 1.0, which is just brochures slapped up on the internet, which don't the conversion's low.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll look to find clients that are sort of stuck in the old world, and maybe using Salesforce or NetSuite or one of the other classic CRMs, which mm-hmm. are very difficult to operate. I mean, they're good for collecting data, but it's hard to run email campaigns through those. And so we look at companies like that, and we say, all right, well, it's time to relook at the whole strategy. Where can we help on the website so we can focus on conversion? And a lot of more traditional companies, a lot of internet marketers are already in this space already, so they have offers. But a lot of more traditional companies, they don't have a free giveaway. They don't have an e-book or a white paper. So we're focusing on, really working with them to understand that, no matter really what industry you're in, if it's you're selling widgets, there's an opportunity for you to write an e-book. And it doesn't have to be too long or too sophisticated, but you can make the same argument, the five biggest mistakes someone makes for, when they buy a snow plowing machine. The five biggest mistakes someone buys when it's everything, when buying a cup of coffee. That's sort of where we're trying to get people to, is saying that, this is a great opportunity now to provide free information to people continually and to stay in front of them and build front of mind presence by dripping with low sale, almost no sale, and just being in the right place at the right time. So when they make a decision to purchase, you're going to be considered.
Excellent. I mean, wow. You, I feel like I could turn the call over to you and go and have lunch. everything you're saying is just right on the money. And I hope everybody listens. One of the values of these call-ins is we have a lot of experience and very informed questioners, and you just sort of describe one of the absolute bedrock core principles of business. Just yesterday I was talking to somebody that does thermal spraying, which is some stage of the industrial process. And he's explained it to me. I don't totally understand everything about it, but that's his business. That's what he's good at. There's hundreds of guys that do it, and none of them have done anything to distinguish themselves. So it's hard to figure out, which thermal spray expert should I go to? So we talked with him, gave him some advice, and he created a report, just like you're advising. Seven habits of highly effective thermal spray operators. Okay? Wouldn't be interest to you, wouldn't it be interest to me, but if you're a thermal spray operator, this is, you. If you have a shred of curiosity, you're going to want the free report. So he's already getting 100 leads a month, which for his business is a super home run, because first of all, he was getting zero leads before. And now, And a job, a thermal spray job could be anywhere from five to six figures. So he doesn't need a whole lot of leads to make things work. So, it's Mike, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Mike just gave everybody like one of the most core principles in business, which is figure out something you can do to give away free. And this is what the internet's so great at. Something that you can give your prospects for free. Information being the easiest and best and most desirable thing, and use that to convert visitors to opt-ins and have leads that you can then follow up on. Because the reality is, no matter what you're selling, you're never going to sell 100% of the people on the first try ever. And so you're going to need a long-term process of staying in front of them. I mean, think about this. Normally people would, in the old days when they wanted to advertise, they would go to a magazine or they'd go to the TV or they'd go somewhere and spend a lot of money to put half a page in a journal, and they would hope that somebody maybe would see it. Well, the internet allows you to become the media. You become your own media. You're the publisher. You're the guy that publishes the white paper, and you're the guy that publishes the weekly newsletter, and you're the guy that publishes the teleseminar. You don't need a radio station to host you. Do your own show. You're the guy that makes your videos and puts them out there. You don't need to go to a TV station and pray they're going to, you know, make you a guest for 30 seconds. You create your own media. So this is a principle for everybody. And Mike, thanks for getting the ball rolling off on such a good foot. We're going to go back to
Thanks a lot, man.
And you know what? I think it sounds like you know what you're doing. And would you please feel free to tell everybody who's listening the name of your company?
All right. Well, I'll put it out there. It's this week we're finishing. We just rebranded the company, so the website is not functional, but I'll put it up there so you can stay tuned. It's
okay.
InternetSalesExperts.com.
Okay. InternetSalesExperts.com. Well, thanks for a great question, and thanks for contributing some great ideas. We're going to go back and open it up to everybody.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say one thing. Thank you, and what you're doing is you're donating your time, and it's 3 hours, which is a long time, and you're putting great energy out there, so it's awesome. Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot. Okay. So we're going to open up to everybody. Okay. All right. Well, let's go with Mike. Mike, go next, and then we'll come back and we'll start with another bunch. I just want to check in, see what people are thinking. Pretty interesting conversation there, huh? Useful, I hope. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Great one. That's pretty much what we're going to be working on today. These just kind of fundamental things, and we'll try to be as case specific as we can be. Mike, are you there?
I am here, Ken. Let me also echo what the first Mike said. Thanks a lot for doing this. This is really great. You know, the first video I ever saw of you, I think you had a beard in it. Do you still have the beard?
I was 34 years old. I'm 50 now, and I shaved the beard off in 2000.
Great.
I grew the beard because I wanted to look old. Now I look old, so I don't need the beard anymore.
Yeah, I can relate to that, being in the same decade. But first off, I want to say easystoryboards.com is my site. And what we're doing is we're teaching folks how to do storyboards. But here's my question. I've been hearing a lot about autoresponder segmentation. I don't really understand it. I'm being told that you can create a drop-down menu on your site so that based upon, let's say someone says, I like watercolors, or I like painting, or I like drawing comics or whatever. Based upon what they choose from that drop-down, you can then tailor the autoresponder message to address that segment of your prospects. You know anything about that? Can you tell me anything about that?
Gotcha. Let's start with the, for lack of a better word, the philosophy behind that, and then we'll talk about the mechanics of executing it. If you think about it, if you're a watercolor person, for example, or use our thermal spray example, and this applies to everything. But since we're talking about storyboards, we'll use watercolor. If you're a watercolor person, that's what you're into. You want to talk about watercolors. You want everything to be couched in terms of watercolors. You want to hang out with other watercolor people. You want to read books about watercolors. That's all you want. So, as a marketer, if you know that somebody is a watercolorist, right, then that gives you a huge advantage. You can create everything that you send that person so that it talks directly to them. And that does, you know, a number of things. Number one, they're going to open what you send them. And number two, they're going to read it. And a lot of people gravely underestimate the challenge of getting people to open and read your emails. That's not a trivial thing. That's actually at least half the game. So if somebody has subscribed to you and identified themselves as a watercolorist, and then you send them stuff that's written specifically to those people, they're going to open the mails more, and they're going to read them more, and they're going to respond more, and they're going to buy more. So, yes, you know, I'm getting some kind of weird thing, so I'm going to just mute you temporarily until we're back to ask you some questions. Oh, boy, that's... Okay. Hey, guys, Mike, are you still there?
I am still here.
Do you hear that weird kind of space age science fiction? Okay, good. Well, it looks like it disappeared. Okay, we're okay. I thought we were being invaded by the Martians or something. They're trying to send a transmission to our call. So yes, it absolutely makes perfect sense to segment. And this goes way back to direct mail. When you think of how expensive it is to put something in the mail, you know, it could cost anywhere from 50 cents to $1.50 per piece. You really have to target very well. So what direct mailers would do is they would do lead generation campaigns to attract very specific people with very specific profiles, and they would write their follow-ups, because direct mail had follow-ups too. You know, it's a misnomer that direct mail is a one-shot thing. Direct mail executed well is very much like an autoresponder series. So the theory, the philosophy, or maybe theory is a better word, the theory of segmenting your opt-ins, segmenting your leads by whatever category makes sense for your business is very, very, very sound. So now let's get down to the mechanics of it. What autoresponder service do you use, if you're using one now?
I use AWeber.
Okay. Well, AWeber definitely lets you... We use AWeber, and I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure this is true. AWeber lets you set up, from what I can see, an infinite number of mailing lists under one account. Okay, so you can create an opt-in sequence just for people that are into watercolor. And one way to do that would be to have this is a very simple way to handle this. On your homepage, just simply ask, are you into watercolors? Are you into, what are the other choices?
I was thinking watercolors, you know, the anime and drawing comics is real big nowadays. People who may prefer using acrylics or even oils storyboards is what we're teaching at Easy Storyboards. But I know that there are other folks. I'm trying to think of, you know, the back end question really was, well, what about the back end? If you're teaching storyboards like we are, can you back end watercolors or anything else like that? Is that, because I guess that's the other question that I had as well.
Okay, well, good. So these are kind of two different questions, but they're both I think worth addressing. Here's the question: when somebody comes to you to learn storyboarding, who is this person? What are they trying to accomplish? Because I always think of storyboarding as something beyond just art. They're maybe planning a movie, or they're planning animation, or they're doing it for a television commercial. Who's your typical client? Who wants to learn storyboarding?
That's a good point. Storyboarding is real popular now because I think in large part the video gaming industry has given storyboarding a real boost. But we're teaching folks who think they can't draw storyboards how to do them, because I've pioneered a system that's pretty easy. It's paint by number, and I can teach anyone who can draw, as my slogan goes, a circle, square, and a triangle, how to do storyboards. It's a pretty straightforward system, kind of like baking a cake. So that's what we're doing. We're getting those folks who are enthusiasts, and they like the idea of storyboards and video gaming and that kind of thing, and they may want to learn how to do it, but may think they can't do it.
Gotcha. Well, now that you mentioned video gaming, it seems to me, and this is just off the top of my head, and you need to research it to see if it's valid, it seems to me that your biggest back end would be leading people to careers and training in computer gaming. Because that's just absolutely huge, right? I mean, that a lot of people perceive that as a really good career path, and the news media is always, I mean, it's a fun thing to do, and the news media is always talking about what a huge industry that is. Any time you can point people to money making or to a career, now you're in a very good place. You know, because people are people will spend on hobbies, but they'll also gladly spend on career training and how to make money training.
I'm sorry, Ken. What the course does is it teaches them how to do storyboards and then how to do storyboards for studios that do video games and ad agencies and other production houses. That's what the course teaches them to do, how to draw storyboards so they can submit them and get assignments from these big companies. I didn't mean to cut you off. Sorry about that.
Oh no, great. No, I get it. Well, good. Then you're back in. I wouldn't necessarily. I may be wrong, but I wouldn't necessarily break it down by medium. I would break it down by.
Welcome to Verizon Wireless. The wireless customer you called is not available at this time. Please try your call again later. Announcement.
I have no idea what's going on.
4-1-3-8-2.
18? Oh, wait a minute. I see someone that needs.
Welcome to Verizon.
There we go. I got him. Oh, I love this system. let me give another shout out to the geniuses and humanitarians that created free. Conferencing.com. I just that would have ruined our call, and I would have, other than muting everybody out, I would have been helpless to do anything about it. And so I thank again our friends at freeconferencing.com who are doing a fantastic job. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily break this down by medium. Here's the deal. After somebody buys the initial product. I would then hit them with offers that will segment your buyers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
You know, create a free report on careers in advertising. Or it could be you could interview a guy who hires artists for advertising, you know, and he could talk about, well, you know, how to build a portfolio and, you know, how to apply correctly and, you know, all those kinds of practical things that job seekers are really interested in. Just record that. Pop it up on an MP3, but do ask people to opt in to get it. Now you've got a list of people that you know are interested in advertising specifically, huh? Then mm-hmm. I would make another free offer. Notice how this echoes what we were talking about with Mike on the first call. I would make another free offer that, you know, insider information on computer gaming, you know, video gaming. And same thing, you know, do an interview or however you want to do it. Get the opt-in, but when you're setting up, and here's the mechanical part, when you're setting up your AWeber opt-in list, create a brand new opt-in, for lack of a better word, stream, so that you have one list that's advertising people, one list that's computer gaming people. What are some of the other reasons people learn to do storyboarding?
I think a lot of folks like them because it's fun to do. I mean, it's fun to actually do the boards. But there are folks who are kind of tapped into like anime, Japanese animation, which is really hot. As I was saying, comics and storyboards are kind of the cousin to comic strips. And video, movies, production studios, production houses, ad agencies, of course. There are lots of places that require storyboards. And nowadays, even some business conference like to storyboard a segment of what they're doing. But before I forget this question, and going back to what you said initially in the original question, would you segment them on the front side or the back side or both? What would you do in terms of...
I'm going to guess, and again, this is a guess and something you need to test. I'm going to guess that if somebody needs to learn storyboarding, they know they need it. They know they're having trouble with it, or they're looking to do better at it, and they're just going to buy your thing. So you just need to have your ads and your promotions where lots of artists and fledgling artists would be hanging out. And then I don't think it makes too much difference who they are when they buy the product,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think where your opportunity is, and you mentioned back end, your opportunity here really is on the back end. Because again, you can segment your buyer list into people who has specifically raised their hand and says, "Hey, I want to work in Hollywood," or "Hey, I want to work on video games," or "Hey, I want to work in the advertising agency business." You can build that list, and then you can then create products specifically for those people. And that's where your biggest opportunity is going to be. And how do you create a product? Well, just the way, let's say we're using video games, and you create your opt-in by giving away an interview that you know gives somebody so if you're a kid at home and you're like you love video games and you see this ad for storyboarding and the ad I'm sure is going to convey the fact that there's potential career you know, I would push that very heavily in all your advertising, that this can lead to a career. This is the gateway to Hollywood, the gateway to comic books, the gateway to video games, et cetera, gateway to advertising career. So put all that in your front end. Basically, your storyboarding product is one that allows people who have an artistic interest, or even if it's maybe all they have is an artistic imagination but no skills, but
right.
they have that artistic interest, and they want to learn this skill so that they can then get somewhere else, right? They don't want to just sit around at home and make storyboards all day and, you know, go nowhere. They want to make storyboards so they can maybe get a job in the advertising world or get a job in. And so I would make sure that in all your ads for the storyboarding product that you definitely include very clear, compelling copy on how this can lead to, how this is a core skill for, you know, professional, you know, artists and communicators, right? So you're selling lots and lots of those. And then after the purchase, you start differentiating, okay, who bought this thing because they're a video game maniac, right? And who bought this thing because they dream of Hollywood, right? Okay, now you're segmenting those lists with the free offers that we talked about earlier. Now you go out and you create your products. And frankly, your product could be very, very simple. You find five guys who hire storyboardists for Hollywood, right? Just, you know, they've got to be findable. You get them on the phone individually. You record it. You maybe edit out the ums and the ahs and stuff like that. And now it's legitimately a course that you can
I'm sorry, real quick. What if most storyboard artists actually do work from home, which is the case? I mean,
they work from home, but they're working for money, I hope.
Yes, that's right. But they do it from home as opposed to going in house, is the point I was.
Oh no, I'm glad you brought that up. That distinction. Then you want to switch your emphasis to say how you can make a great living doing your art from home. Storyboarding's the key, and so then you create a course where you go out and you interview 5 or 10 or 12 successful artists who are working from home, and you ask them questions about how they've started their career and, you know, how they find clients and all those kinds of things that somebody at the beginning of that process just is dying to know. Do you follow? Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. That's a great idea. I really now, is this call going to be available? I know it was recorded. Will it be available later, Ken? Will we be able to get a copy of it?
I hope we're recording it. the machine says that we are, and you know, who knows till I check it, right? But if we are recording it, and you drop me an email and remind us to do something with it, odds are very good that we'll put it out there. Why not, right? It can't hurt.
I really appreciate your insight and the advice. But you're saying that I can actually set up segmentation on the front end of the web page to catch those folks who might want different elements of the offer with AWeber, just set up different Autobots, I guess, for each one. Is that what you're saying?
Well, exactly. But what I'm saying is in your your front end advertising is pretty much learn storyboarding and make money. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of your front end, and that's a general offer that's just going to grab everybody that is going to be a potential customer for you. But what I'm saying is segment the buyers for sure by making them offers, like sending them a free offer. Hey, learn how to, you know, break into video games, right? They respond. Now you've got their email. Now they're on your video game list. Now you can send them video game related offers.
Okay.
Is what I'm saying. And then also, as Mike said, not everybody's going to buy the first time. So, you know, have things that allow them to learn some stuff and maybe raise their hand and on the website. See, here's the deal. In your advertising, you can only run one ad. Someone's only going to look at one ad. They're not going to look at 20 different ads. They're going to be off doing something else. So you only have one shot to get them. So you want your front-end ad to be as broad and compelling as possible. But once they're on your site, you could have a section on your site about video games. You could have a section on your site about Hollywood. You could have a section on your site about ad agencies. And then someone's going to say, oh, well, I really want to work for an ad agency. They click on that. Now there's information that they can read. And then there's your offer for the free interview with, you know, Joe Smith ad agency exec tells the secrets of how you can work from home and sell storyboards to Madison Avenue. Okay, gotcha. So you can grab these leads from people that come to your website, and you can grab them from people that have purchased your product. And that's that. And we spend a fair amount of time on this call because I think we're covering such fundamental stuff that it should be of value to everyone. So, Mike, I'm glad. I hope this helped, and I'm going to go back to the big
Thanks
crowd.
Thanks, Ken. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. And it's another great set of questions. I do appreciate you too. And hang on. And the next person will be Toby. Toby, are you there?
All right, this is Toby.
Hey, Toby, what's your last four digits of your phone number?
4514.
4514. Okay. Let's see. Beautiful. Oh, I love this. All right, somebody mute everybody. And I'm going to – wait, did I do that? Hang on 1 second. Beautiful. And I'm going to turn Toby on. Toby, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Beautiful. This is great. Everybody can make as much noise as they want. They can run the vacuum cleaner. They can crank up the football game. They can do all the crazy stuff that people usually do on these calls. And it won't matter.
Great.
So, Toby, what's up?
By the way, I think freeconferencing.com always makes an MP3 by default, but I could be wrong. But
okay.
So that would be just something to know. But my question is about deals with lead generation, Squeeze, Page, and WordPress. We're working on setting up a new project in the fitness industry, and we're going to start off using social media, i.e. Facebook and YouTube, to drive traffic to a Squeeze page to collect the opt-in and then market on the back end. My question is that the best way to set this up, if I should be driving them to a static page or should I be using the WordPress and have the Squeeze page on the home page be static? And the only thing that worries me about that is that, you know, I like the WordPress because it has the natural search engine traffic coming to it. But for people that return to the blog, is that going to be an annoyance to them to see that Squeeze page constantly on the front page?
Gotcha.
Is there a better way to set this up?
Gotcha. Let's go over a few basic things for everybody so everyone's make sure everybody's following. What a Squeeze page is a landing page that asks for information. You know, it won't let you go any further without, you know, you're just saying, hey, complete recording available, just opt in. And opt in, of course, means give me some information about you. General principle is only ask for the information you actually are going to use. So, for instance, on our pages, we ask for first name and email. Why do we do that? Because we like to address people by name, and we need their email. You know, we don't ask for weight or height or birth date or any of that stuff. So just a simple thing, but I see a lot of people get that wrong. They just ask for too much stuff. Okay, so I think everybody gets the issue. And then why do you do this? You do this so that you end up with a list of people that you can follow up with. Why do you need that? Because, again, you're never going to sell everybody or even half of everybody the first time. You're probably only going to sell a small fraction the first time, and the real sales come from continued exposure. All right, so that's just to set the stage. Okay, so what's the best mechanics for this? WordPress absolutely is great for SEO. It makes SEO a lot easier. So that's a plus. What I don't like about WordPress is I know everybody claims that you can do all these amazing things with the way WordPress looks, but I find it easier just to craft. If I want to control the look of my page right down to the last element, it's always going to be easier to do that with HTML, straight HTML, than it will be to do it on WordPress. Okay. Now, that said, WordPress is great. You should absolutely have a WordPress blog. It should be, sort of a semi-customized blog. By the way, why WordPress? For everybody listening, for whatever reason, we don't know why, Google loves WordPress. They don't even love their own blogging platform as much as they love WordPress. So if you're doing blogging, too bad for everybody else that's in that business, but WordPress apparently won the game and put your stuff in WordPress blog. Second thing about WordPress is customize it a little bit. it just, for some reason, Google apparently gives customized, semi, doesn't have to be wildly customized, but semi-customized blogs a little bit more weight than generic blogs. All right, so you've got your WordPress blog. What I would do with your WordPress blog is write little articles that point people to your landing page, your squeeze page that you've created in HTML. Yeah, I would not slam that, you know, that squeeze page on the front of your blog, so whenever anybody comes to your blog, they're confronting this opt-in thing. I would definitely not do that. Make a blog a blog. You know, what is a blog? A blog is this ever-growing collection of interesting, useful articles. But in our case, as marketers, we want to make sure that every one of those articles ends with, and for more information, go to click, and now they click on that link, and now they end up at the page that looks exactly the way we want it to look, not the way WordPress kind of makes it look. So that's how I would handle that up to that point. I would absolutely continue with my blogging. I would, you know, make sure you're doing 2 to 3 articles a week. For everybody that's listening, Google likes to see action. You know, that what is Google looking for? Google's looking for, they're trying to find real stuff, and they're trying to differentiate between the real and the bogus. Okay, and so they think, well, if somebody's got a semi-customized blog, they're probably more likely to be real than some, you know, operation run out of Bulgaria. You know, no offense to our Bulgarian friends, or you know, but you know, we know what I'm talking about. And if new content, original content is appearing 2 to 3 times a week, this looks like an active blog. So, you know, it's a true resource for people that are doing their search. So why do we do blogs? Frankly, we do blogs to create SEO bait, right? But often you're going to want to push your visitors from the blog to somewhere else where you can control the look more or better. That's my answer to that. Yeah,
that sounds great, and I love that idea. So after I get the opt-in and I get the from AWeber and I send them to the thank you, would you send them back to the blog, or should I go right for the affiliate product?
This is a great question. One of the most, and it's something I haven't thought about in a long time, and you know, we forget sometimes the stuff that really works best. The most valuable real estate on the internet is the thank you page, and it's the most underutilized real estate on the internet. Right? So for everybody listening, think about this: they saw your ad, they clicked on your, they read it, they clicked on it. They came to your opt-in page, or maybe they came to your blog article. They read your blog article. They clicked on the link at the end of the article. They went to your opt-in page. They read your opt-in page. They were inspired. They put in your data. Count how many positive decisions they made to get to that thank you page. They're into you. You know, they're into it. Whatever it is you're selling or whatever it is you're saying, they are into it. They're as receptive as they're ever going to be. And most of us, and I'm sorry to say me included sometimes, just put a page that says, thank you for your opt-in. You know, it's ridiculous. What we really should do is take the thing that we most want them to do, read, think, believe, watch, listen to, whatever that might be, and put it right on the thank you page. You're going to get phenomenal response, phenomenal conversion, because these are very qualified people. And what do we mean by qualified? We mean they've done step A, then they've decided to do step B, and they've decided to do step 3, and now all of a sudden they're looking at this thank you page. And, man, anything you put there, they're going to read, they're going to watch, they're going to listen to at extremely high rates. Now, about your affiliate offer, This we learned from Greg Davis, and it's kind of a confirmation of something that we kind of knew, but, you know, again, sometimes you do this stuff for so long, you forget the basics, you have to be reminded. Don't just send people cold to a if you want them, here's the deal, if you want the maximum response, huh, you want the most possible money from the traffic that you're getting, don't send people cold to a to an affiliate offer. Always have, I forget the term he uses, I'll just make one up now, a warm-up page. You know, a page that kind of gets them prepared and ready and excited and interested in what they're, so that when they arrive on that affiliate site, their mind is already 90% of the way to being into it.
So okay? What if you do like the, I think it's the sandwich that maybe Evan Pagan, where I get the they go to the thank you page, and then I give them that one secret to what I promised to give them to get the opt-in, and then I pre-sell them saying, you know, honestly, I didn't just learn this on my own. I learned it in by this guy. So I'm pre-selling the product.
Absolutely. That's the term that Greg uses. And I'm glad Eben's coming up with a good name for it. The sandwich page, that's cool. But, I mean, this is really older than the hills, and it's absolutely the right way to do it. And the reason that people like Greg or Eben or people in that category do this is because they spend real cash on leads. You know, for instance, Greg might have a day where he's spending $50,000 on internet traffic, one day, his own money, right? So when that traffic hits his site, he wants to derive maximum benefit from it. So that's why, yeah, he does that I forget what we called it, but I think I would call it a warm-up page, so that they get kind of conditioned, so that when they find themselves on this affiliate site, they like know why they're there, they're excited about being there. Though, see, the worst thing you can do is just take somebody, just throw them at a website, and they're not exactly sure what they're supposed to be finding or why they're there or why they should care. And so, yeah, you've hit on something really important. Give them something. Give them something right away that makes them go, "Wow, I'm glad I opted in for this thing because I just got a great." I love that transition, by the way, that you just mentioned. I here's something great. And I didn't learn this myself. I learned this from this guy. Click here for more. I mean, that's a great transition. But Greg will create whole pages that are just, you know, chock full of interesting things to read, and they all end with a link, and they all link to the affiliate offer. And every one of those little things that he's got on the page, obviously he's doing it in a very elaborate way because, you know, he's got a lot of money at stake. But you start simple and then you make it elaborate. But the principle is rock solid. When they say thank you, monetize that thank you. When you send someone to an affiliate offer, never send them cold. Always prep them so when they arrive there, they're halfway or 90% of the way into the affiliate offer mentally.
Awesome. Yeah, it's so helpful to talk this talk it through with someone. So I learned so much on your calls.
Oh my! Hey, you know, this is fun for me, and it helps tune me up and remind me of the good stuff and. I love this stuff. You know, I've been doing it years, and I never get tired of it. So thanks for being interested in it, and I'm glad it helped.
All right, thank you.
Okay, great. We're gonna open it up.
Steve,
I heard Steve. I heard Steve.
Emerson.
Emerson.
Ellen.
Scott. Ellen. Okay, guys. All right. So we got those three. Steve.
Yes, I do teleconferencing calls. You know, for classes, and that's a great feature, by the way. There's always some ambient noise everywhere. It just ruins it, you know.
I remember once a guy went to like a football game that had 60,000 people in the stands.
Gosh.
And it was noisy. and he wouldn't turn his phone off, and I was like, all right. Well, hey, what's up? What's on your mind?
Thank you for this. I've been following you for a very long time. I've not been able to afford the system seminar, but I do plan on it. Who knows what might happen, but I would love to come.
Well, hey, you know, that's fine. Take advantage of all the stuff we're doing as you are doing, and that's the right thing to do.
I've learned an awful lot. I'm learning as I go. I've gone to school. I have a master's degree. I've been going. Seven ratings as a pilot, so I've been going to school my whole life, and I keep doing it. Anyway, what I wanted to say is that I have my site is lesterandme.com. And
Lester?
Lester, L-E-S-T-E-R, and me.com.
Okay,
my
cool.
My teacher was Lester Levinson, who was, I have a book written on him. It's been sold online in 23 countries by now. And the problem is I have an interesting marketing problem, is that I'm like either every day I'm either number, when you search that name of that man, it's like 250,000 entries, but I'm like number 5 or 6 on Google every single day, 24/7.
Wow.
And yet my conversion rate, talking about profit, I switched something around, a free thing right at the top with some marketing guy told me to do, and I tripled my conversion as far as opt-ins. You know, people every day opting in, but my conversion rate as far as money is very poor.
What do you see? And your product is the book.
Well, one product, it's like a leader. It's a book. It sells for like $19.95. Gets people in there. And the other products are recording MP3s of past teleconferences I've done. And there are a bunch of, there's only two other guys doing this. They charge a lot more money. I'm like less than half of what they charge, and I'm sort of like the Walmart of doing this. These other two guys, but ours is called the KISS, Keep It Simple, Sweetheart, releasing technique that this guy taught me and other people. And it's there's a lot of interest in this band. I mean, obviously, with my book in 23 countries, it has to be, you know. And yet, I should be my money should be better, and it's not. So I just, it's a problem, and I'm trying to solve it. It can be.
Well, you know, I know a little bit. I think about this is is this also known as the Sedona method?
Yes, sir. Yes, you are correct. Okay. I studied with Lester for 11 years. I was on the phone with him every day. Very old disciple of his for 11 years. We spoke almost every day. And my book is trying to get it published, but it's sold. Now it's not selling as well because it's. I'm not going to say how it's being traded, but anyway. So I don't want to, advertise that. But anyway, it's very popular all over the internet. I should be doing better. I know.
I know. We all feel that
especially
way, right? About it.
If there's interest in this guy, and I was one of the only one of three disciples left in the world, I should be able to convert and make money with this.
Yeah. Let's look at this. Your story. And all sales is a story, right? I mean, if we buy a car, if we buy a house, it's always a story. It's like, oh, this is a great house, it's a great neighborhood, great schools, great neighbors, it was built, by a craftsman. It's a story. I mean, yeah, there's a real house too, but story is very important in selling, and you obviously got a great story on the phone with Lester every day, one of his first three disciples. I mean, this is huge. So the question is, how do you monetize that? So you've got your book. And then what else is available? What else do you make available besides the book? I'm just trying to get the idea of the structure of the business.
Yeah, yes. It's selling. I do these teleconferences. In fact, I have one today at 1 o'clock Pacific time, and I'm on the front on this call with you.
Oh.
So but I have one. And so anyway, once I have these recorded, and then I sell these, and people have bought them, from time to time, but not every day. And I at this point, I don't even make I don't even make $50 every single day on the site.
Now the calls are free.
The people pay for the calls. Not that like today, it's $107 for this call. Three Sundays that I teach this, so they get a lot of value, and I pump in a lot of value to it. They get a free other book I have. They get a lot of value, and yet still. I guess there's not that many people. I have under 20 people for the call.
Okay.
The numbers are not good. Maybe my list is not big enough. I'm really at a loss at this point.
Well, a lot of it may be just simply the size of the list. I mean, sometimes I go through the same thing. Sometimes I see people, who I know don't really know much about internet marketing. They know a few things, and half the things that they know and they're teaching are wrong, but somehow by hook or crook they've landed these relations that put them in front of 100-200,000 people lists, and my list's not that big, and it's kind of like a baseline reality. The business is only going to be as big ultimately as your list, it's kind of like your ocean. Only so many fish can fit in a certain amount of water, and the size of the body of water is going to determine how many fish can be in it. So it could be something as simple as that. It may be that your marketing, is actually converting pretty well, and people are happy and with what you're doing, but you need more people.
By the way, just as a little pat on my head, Alan says recently bought my book, which says a lot about. Book, and he's got almost 1 million people. Like he's one of I think he's the largest internet forum that there is.
Oh, and his name is Alan.
Alan's at warriorforum.com.
Oh, Warrior Forum. Oh, cool. Wow.
Alan says, he bought my book, and I have his email, and I'm still contemplating how to approach that as a platinum lead. I mean, this guy could be the the open door to a lot.
Well, I just be in touch with them, human being to human being, and say, hey, I'm glad you liked the book, and just take it from there. You know.
Yeah.
Wow. So
some very well-known people. Marion Snow had a best-selling book, "Get Up Off Your Assets." She loved it. She actually put her testimony on my site. She loved the book. You know.
One way for you to play this, and I've seen people do this, is since your book is a good book and it's getting good traction among people like the people that you mentioned, some of those people may have lists. Some of those people may be willing to do a interview with you, you know, where they're talking with you about the principles in the book and your experiences with your teacher and the principles that he taught that make, you know, life better for people. Let's switch gears here. I'm a list owner, and I hopefully, you know, have an interest in helping my list members. And I need content all the time. You know, it's really true. I need new guests. I need new ideas. Like every list, my list is fickle. You know, if I don't continuously produce interesting stuff, they'll wander off and go somewhere else. So this is the problem confronting all these people who like your book. They always need something new to put in front of people. So you might start considering packaging yourself as a guest who has specialized knowledge. I mean, you've got an amazing story. You worked closely with and was in on the ground floor with and communicated daily with Lester Levinson, who created the Sedona method. And
It's a good USP, isn't it? I mean, am I correct on that?
You are absolutely correct. Now, here's the key. If somebody knows and likes the Sedona method, they are going to, I have to think they're going to want to talk to you.
Yes.
I mean, I can't imagine, why wouldn't you want to talk to you, though? So I would follow up, and so how does this work? So you would create some kind of a free offer so that every time you do one of these interviews, you can tell people, well, hey, you know, if you'd like to learn more about the book or learn more about the method or just hear more about Lester and his approach to things, just come to our website and get our free report or our free, you know, 10 tips or 7 how-tos or whatever. You know, you have to figure out how to structure. You have to think what are the hot buttons that
are you a graduate? By the way, are you a graduate?
You know, I took the Sedona method in 1984.
No,
yeah, there's a lot of graduates of that program.
Wow, I took it in 83. Took it a year after me. You're a very old graduate. I had an intuition that you were. It's amazing.
You've
done so well.
It helps. It helps. And I'll tell you, everybody listening, I have a really good friend out in California that's went through an unbelievably horrendous life experience. Her lovely husband, who's one of my absolute best friends ever, was in a terrible accident, and he was, you know, just broken to shreds. And he lived a very hard life for 5 years and then died. And then, I mean, the disasters this woman went through were unbelievable. And the point is, the Sedona method kept her sane and kept her positive and kept her going.
I've heard these stories, the so-called miracles, which, according to Lester, are not miracles whatsoever. They're natural out-picturing of your consciousness. They're not miracles, you know, at all.
It's technique, huh? It's knowing how to roll.
Exactly.
And I mean,
Letting go, releasing.
Yeah, and by the way, for everybody, what is your website? If anybody's listening, let's send them to it right now.
My site, you mean?
Your site, yeah.
Lester, LesterAnd, spelled out, me.com. Very simple, LesterAndMe.com.
LesterAndMe.com. Yeah, we're going off a little bit from marketing, but on the other hand, a lot of marketing is just coming back every day and hitting it again, you know, and that takes having your mind in the right place.
Same problem is I've told this to marketers, I'm number 5 or 6 from the top of Google, which is a pretty good position. People would pay to get to that position, and yet my conversion rate as far as money is very poor.
Well, this is an interesting point, and everybody, this is for everybody, and again, that's why we're taking a little special extra time with this call, because this applies to everybody. When we say conversion rate, we're actually talking about very specific things, huh? We're talking about how many people visit the page and what percentage of those people take the measurable action that you've set up for them to take, all right? So you actually might have great conversion, okay, on that very important metric. Now, you may not be making the money you want to make, but that's more of a business model issue, and it's also more of a just sheer traffic issue. Now, it's great that you've got high Google rankings, right? And that's a good thing. But I'm going to guess that other people in for lack of a better word, I'll call the Lester Levinson industry, are getting leads from other sources. You know, for instance, they're appearing, they're speaking at self-improvement seminars. They're tapping into other people's lists through endorsed mailings. And this is why I'm strongly encouraging that you start to think of packaging yourself a little bit as a you know, expert celebrity, and that, you know, every time somebody does a good review of you, and it sounds like you're getting a lot of good reviews, that you just contact them and say, hey, thanks so much for the book. You know, we're always trying to get this book out to more people. And if you have an interview program or you have a newsletter or a blog or something, I'd love to be a guest and tell people about the book. Now, some people are going to go, nah, you know, I'm not going to do that. But other people are going to go, wow, you know, this book really moved me. I know it can help my customers. By God, I want you in front of my customers. Let's do this next Thursday. So it's a numbers game. It's just keep knocking on the doors, and some people will say yes, some people will say no. But here's the key: that exposure will yield more money, believe it or not, than high rankings in Google. Okay, here's why, and of course it has to do with volume and how many people and so on, but the quality of the lead is much, much, much higher when you're being introduced by somebody who has their own personal following. All right. If I'm sitting at home and I kind of type Lester Levinson and up comes your name, it's great that you're highly ranked, but you're just another web page among many. Mm-hmm. You know, it's better than nothing, and you're getting a fairly well developed, qualified piece of traffic because you know they're interested in Lester Levinson, they're interested in Sedona, but it's not the ultimate in qualification.
Said something to that effect when you said it jumped out at me when you said traffic isn't everything. You know, traffic is one thing, but it's not everything. It's not some party of internet marketing. It's not the only thing.
It's not the only thing at all. And I'll tell you, I would rather be. We were talking, going way back to the beginning when we were talking with Mike. I would rather be in front of. Let's say Mike could someday get a speaking gig, talking about internet conversion to that audience that he's going to go speak at, or his marketing materials are going to be at. It's more valuable to him to be in front of 1,000 people like that than it would be for him to get, I'm going to say, 500,000 web visits. Absolutely, because you got to think about marketing as a mining, refining process. Okay, if you show me 100 acres of dirt and there's gold in there, that's good, but I have to now go get the bulldozers and the men and the housing, and I've got to feed them, and I've got to get the trucks, and the gold's there, but I got to do a lot to dig it out. So that gold gets dug, and then it gets refined, and now it's kind of in a raw state. Okay, now it's way more valuable, huh? Now that gets passed to a real refiner, and it gets refined to 24 karat, let's say. Okay, now it's way more valuable. Now it's in the hand of a jeweler who turns it into something really beautiful and puts it in a store on Broadway, or Fifth Avenue in New York City. Now that gold is worth, you know, way, way, way more. Okay, search engine traffic, nice as it is, it's free, it's semi-qualified, it's kind of more like that raw, ignit state. You know, it's more valuable than gold in the dirt, but it's, you know, you can't put it on your finger, and you're not going to get a premium for it. You're going to just get whatever the commodity price is. And an endorsement from somebody who is respected by a specific group of people, if they say, oh, this book, this book that Steve wrote is phenomenal, it changed my life, I recommend you get it. Holy smokes. And by the way, everybody listening to that call is somebody that you know is a book buyer. You know they're an info junkie, for lack of a better word. You know they love to self-improve, improve themselves. You know all that because they're members of this person's list. So you're not only getting people that are 100% qualified by temperament to buy and be interested in your book, you're getting like a solid gold endorsement from somebody this list knows and trusts. So my guess is people that are what you call converting, making more revenue, the reason they're doing that is they're going further up the food chain and getting that more highly refined lead source, people that are ready and conditioned to buy, huh? And that if you would take that approach, here's the great thing. This I want you to get into the core of your bones. I'm going to leave you with this. You've got a super story. For people that know Sedona, like Sedona, are interested in Sedona, you know, nobody's got a better story. All you have to do is just tell it over and over and over and over again, and understanding that, you know, a lot of people are going to just not care, but, you know, what can you do? There will be people that will be really interested. I run through this all the time. You know, look, I put on the first internet marketing seminar in the world. I was the guy. All this stuff you see flows out of that seminar, okay? Now, does that mean that I can instantly convert that to wealth? I can't. That fact alone is actually worth zero. I have to go out and hustle and tell my story over and over and over again. And some are interested, some are not. Some respect my credentials, some don't. You know, whatever. You know, but I know that my job is to distill my story to its most powerful essence, and then just tell it over and over and over again. And then the other piece that I'd give you is work higher up. Start thinking about working higher up the food chain, telling that story higher up the food chain. I'll give everybody this example, and then we'll go to the next call, but I think this will be helpful. Long story short, I was kind of an accident in the mid-90s, and it really slowed me down. And I still worked, but I kind of was semi-retired, and I didn't start regaining my health till about 2000, 2001. And so I moved to this little village and just started to chill out. And I thought, well, I got to do something. So I decided to give a course on internet marketing at the local library. Huh? Two people showed up, and they weren't even listening to what I was saying. You know? So then, you know, a year later, I've gotten my health back. I'm speaking, you know, I'm reconnecting with my old colleagues. Now I'm in front of 500 people that are paying several thousand dollars each. I'm the same guy. It's the same information, different setting. And the setting kind of determines how you're going to get paid. So that's why you want to put yourself ever higher up that food chain. So I hope that was helpful, Steve.
I just want to leave people with what Lester, who is, by the way, a millionaire himself. He back in 1952, he was, you know, he sold, he had $1 million in properties that he made in 6 months, I think it was. $1 million in 1952 was even a lot more than $1 million today. The average man made $3,000 a year, maybe, you know. But he said marketing is talking to people's programs, in other words, their beliefs. That's all marketing is, very simple. So that's what he said. So,
wow, that's a good one. I appreciate that. Great. Hey, we're going to open up.
Thanks so
and
much.
I'm gonna you're very welcome, Steve. And thanks for telling us about your site, which is LesterAndMe.com.
Thanks so much.